Welcome to the GeoMob Podcast, where we discuss geo-innovation in any and all forms, whether for fun or profit. Hello, Stephen.
Hello, Ed. How are you?
I'm very good. I'm very good, Stephen. I'm just back from a week in London. We had GeoMob London last week, so good time for us to get on and recap. Not just London, we also had Barcelona the week before that, so let's recap some events.
Okay, let's start with some events. We've got a bit of other news as well, haven't we?
Well, first of all, we had GeoMob Barcelona about 2 weeks ago now. Stephen, we're still struggling to get momentum in Barcelona. We had about 20 people, I would guess, show up. We did have 4 very interesting talks, so a big thanks to our speakers. But I don't know what we're doing wrong to get, we're still kind of lacking the critical mass on the attendance. And then also afterwards, half the group had to leave, didn't really come along to the discussion phase. So frustrating.
So, I mean, it's just a thought from me, but we make the assumption that the sort of format framework that we use successfully in London is going to work in every city. And some cities don't have that culture of going out after work and going for a few drinks and all of that. You know, I mean, some cities, people go home straight up from work. You know, there's less of a bar and culture. I don't know whether that's it. Or maybe Barcelona's not a geospatial city.
Well, the thing is, Stephen, there is no shortage of people who are doing interesting things to give talks. So in that regard, I guess I would challenge those not a geospatial city. But it is true that for whatever reason we just don't have the cultural fit there yet. So I don't know. Nevertheless, I do want to say thank you to everyone who came, and we do seem to have kind of an inner core of, let's say, 10 people or so who come along every time. So that's very good, and thank you to all of them. And we also have, a core group of speakers. Two of our 4 speakers were repeat speakers who have spoken in the past. So that's very nice and very interesting projects that they described. Nevertheless, we also need new speakers. So, I don't know. Anyway, let me take you quickly through the talks.
Go on.
So our first speaker, Isaac, he very interesting startup, Anacoy, which this is about. So the issue is positioning. So kind of GPS base stations, like how does your phone, actually know where it is and triangulate where it is? And so, there are these very, very precise base stations that are getting the signal, of course, from all the satellites. The problem is they're typically very expensive. And so they work quite well, but they're expensive. And so particularly in the developing world, coverage is not great. So what this company tries to do is use much, much cheaper hardware and to solve the precision issue by having a lot of it. And the whole idea is not that they do the hardware, but they get people, you or anyone can buy the hardware. I think you said it costs like 300 euro or so. You set it up, connect it to the internet, everything, and then, put it on your roof so it has a good line of sight. And this hardware is much cheaper, and so it doesn't have quite the range coverage and things. But if we get enough people doing it, it can still also be very precise. And so the idea is that this proves to be an alternative for areas that currently don't have, great coverage. And so this is really about, just to be clear, this is about, taking precision from, instead of 1 meter precision, going down to 1 centimeter precision in terms of positioning. But the interesting twist on it, of course, so what's my incentive to go buy this hardware? The incentive is that, the more my station is used, the more I get paid. Okay. And it's a little bit complicated, of course, it's via some kind of blockchain token thing. But Particularly if you're in a remote area where your station really helps improve the coverage. You know, his estimate was they have people who earn roughly €1,000 a year doing this. So, you know, you pay whatever it was, $250, $300 for the hardware, and you're making $1,000.
Okay.
Obviously, that one, if you're in central Barcelona or whatever, you're competing with many other people nearby, and so you're not going to be making that much. But it was, you know, it seemed to be a very interesting model for developing world countries. So, anyway, I thought it was quite interesting.
Good.
So, next up, we had a talk from a guy named Mick, who... He works at a company called Giga, which is kind of contracted to, I believe it's UNESCO, anyway, a UN government body that it's all about mapping all the schools of the world, creating a map of all the schools, and also not just a map, but not just their locations, but also their connectivity status. And the idea being that, you know, many governments actually don't know where all the schools are. And for a variety of reasons. And so it seems in total around the world, there are about 6 million schools. And so they're gathering all this data from open sources, from government sources, and trying to create the comprehensive database of where the schools are, which can then be quite useful in all kinds of other things, all sorts of you know, vaccination programs, all this type of thing. And first of all, of course, also delivering education. And so the customer audience is kind of NGOs and development organizations that are who need comprehensive databases of the schools. So he talked a bit about the challenges there. Anyway, the next talk was also on the topic of schools, and was delivered by Tony Del Rio, who he has spoken several times. And it's interesting because the last time he spoke, it was about, he had just had a baby, he and his wife. And so he would take the baby for walks, and he was trying to figure out, you know, where are the quiet places. So he would kind of map, right, mapping sound. Anyway, so as they tend to do, that baby is now older. And it's now time for the baby to go off to school. So he looked at the various governmental sites that have data about the schools and catchment areas and things like that. And there was some information there, but it was not quite at the standard that he had hoped. So he kind of built an open source tool to, you know, mash this up with all kinds of other data and provide a much more comprehensive and usable tool. And of course, with maps and things versus instead of just kind of static PDFs and kind of show all the different scores of the schools and things like that. So a very, very nice hobby project. And then finally, we had Roger, who he and a colleague had built a site called 100 Sims, which is Catalan for 100 peaks. And basically... In Catalonia, there are lots of mountains and and lots of hiking clubs, and people like to go hike these mountains, and you can hike all 100 peaks of the Pyrenees or whatever, you know, and people have their lists that they cross off which ones they've been to. But the idea was to make as a challenge to themselves to use one of these new kind of vibe coding platforms to see how quickly they could make a good-looking site about this topic, doing the minimal amount of programming, right? Getting the AI to do all the work. And so they described the challenges of that and what worked well and what didn't well and how they kind of, again, mashed up the different data sets, also from Wikipedia and things like this. And I have to say, the site really does look good. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I'm just looking at it.
It's really nice. And
you know, we like to trash vibe coding and sort of all of that. But if that is vibe coding, it certainly looks pretty good to me.
Well, yes, Stephen, but my critique of vibe coding is not that it can't build things. Obviously, it's a very nice looking site. My question is, who's going to maintain it? And who's going to... you know, that's for me is the much harder challenge of maintaining things over time and not just putting something out and 2 years time, someone goes to the site and it's kind of half broken and there haven't been any security updates and, you know, someone has hacked the comment section or whatever. So that remains to be seen. Nevertheless, it was a very interesting talk. And that talk actually won the best speaker prize, because it kind of, you know, talked about all the vibe coding in general, but also the geospatial challenges around it. So
nice.
So on the whole, very good talks, but, as I said,
you need more people,
not quite the attendance I'd hoped for. So dear listener, if you are in or around Barcelona, I don't know when we're going to do the next one, I guess sometime in the autumn, but, we need more talks, but also we need more attendees. We need more people who are not just doing interesting things, but people who want to share that and bring their friends and colleagues and build it up.
And that's not the problem in London.
That is exactly what I was about to say. Now, you know, looking at the other side of the coin, last week I was in London and we had a great event. Again, huge turnout. You know, probably 80 to 100 people, I would guess, as has been the last couple events. I mean, the entire Geovation space was very full. Lots of regulars, but again, lots of new people who you know, had heard about GeoMob and were excited to come try it out. It was, I have to say, it was a delightful summer evening before the heat wave, so just perfect temperature. And London on a summer evening is unbeatable.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's run through the talks. So, first of all, we had Care from Scrambled Maps, who of course has been here on the podcast, and he showed off Scrambled Maps and some of the other map based games that he has created. Then we had Steve representing OSM UK, giving us an update on OSM UK, which is of course kind of the non-profit body that kind of coordinates and represents OpenStreetMap in the UK. In that regard, I should of course give one further announcement that he also emphasized, is that State of the Map Europe is coming to the UK. It will be up in Scotland in November, in Dundee, middle of November. So everyone should please check that out.
And dress warmly.
I'm still a bit torn whether I'm going to make it or not, to be honest, because it's just, I'm all for having it in Dundee. It's not the easiest place for me to get to. And I was just up in Scotland a couple months ago, so I don't know. We'll have to see. I think I'll probably decide as we get closer to the event. The next talk from Anne Lee. I like this talk a lot. So she is kind of an artist.
Kind of an artist.
Well, she is an artist. I don't think that's her full time job. But this project was about using maps in art, and also what you call advocacy. So how do you use map as a visual tool to engage with the audience and get them thinking about things? And she and her colleague, they actually brought this very cool device that they had built for an exhibit. So it was kind of a touch screen device. I'm not doing a good job of describing it because it wasn't like an iPad. It was kind of a rectangular box with which also had a touch screen on one side, and then you could zoom in on the map and click on an oil spill. So it kind of had a database. It showed a database of locations of all major oil spills. But then it would print out on a kind of receipt printer. It would print out the details of that oil spill. The point was that, of course, we can just show a map of the oil spill, but by creating this tool that people could engage with and move the map around and stuff, and then giving them this physical artifact, which also had kind of a receipt style map and facts on it, Anyway, you could just see the audience engage with this much more. Okay. Right.
Okay.
And so that was quite interesting. And she talked about some of how they think about that and showed off some projects that she had done, but others that had kind of inspired her. I personally found this to be the most engaging talk, but nevertheless, she did not win the Best Speaker Prize. That was the next talk, which was Safest Way, which I think you're familiar with because you were the one who actually recommended that they come and speak at GeoMob.
That's right, Alesha.
Yes, Alesha and her colleague Ilya, they did the talk together. So Safest Way is a tool that so you can a routing service based on safety. Instead of finding the fastest way between A and B, I want to find the safest way, particularly for pedestrians. Particularly, it's focused on London. Maybe at night. And the classic example is that your standard routing tool, Google Maps or whatever, might send you through the park. But in the middle of the night, you might not feel safe walking through the dark park, right? And so you instead want to go, by a more well-lit route. And they describe some of the technical challenges around that, trying to get this information about lighting and things like that. So very interesting talk. And good luck to them. They are a Geovation startup currently.
Yeah.
So.
And they're not the first people to try and do this, are they?
Right.
I think we've had at GeoMob at least one or two others.
We have had several talks along these lines. So the challenge I see for them is, of course, everyone thinks this is a great idea, but how do you actually make money doing it? Are people willing to pay for this service or not? Or can you find some sort of sponsoring organization that is willing to fund the development? Because frankly, it was a lot of work. I mean, they talked about all the, trying to get this data and merge it all together and clean it up. And, there were a lot of technical challenges.
Yeah. And it's also, if you're talking about lighting, it's not 100% certain that there's a simple correlation between the level of street lighting.
Well, this would be one of the criticisms is, how do we actually, they weren't just doing lighting. They were also looking at, crime data and things like that.
Right.
But obviously, of course, there's no guarantee that just because an area was safe in the past that it's safe today or vice versa. Mm-hmm. So, yes, there are a lot of challenges. Anyway, then our final talk, Anthony, who I want to thank because he jumped in at the last minute. Our best speaker had to cancel due to travel issues. So I put out a post asking if anyone wanted to jump in. Literally, I posted this like 3 or 4 hours before the event. And Anthony of his company Way2 jumped in. So big thanks to him. So his talk was interesting because he gave he has a long history in the delivery industry, all kinds of delivery of bulky items. And he described how he started in the industry 30 years ago, and his actual job was. Being the navigator, so like in the truck reading the A to Z while the driver drove, so all the way from that to having all kinds of sat nav systems and things like that. But despite all the technical advancements, of course there are still massive problems here, and it's a huge challenge to get things delivered well, all the aspects of course where to park and especially if you're delivering bulky items in a big truck, it's not so trivial. And, so he kind of took us through some of the shortcomings of the existing solutions. So here's how he's solving it with this company Way2. His premise is that the best person to know, where to deliver the item is the recipient. So we should create a tool such that the recipient can you know, very concisely using both a map and a pin, but also kind of free text describe how best to make this delivery. And particularly in the use case where this is someone who's receiving a lot of deliveries. So, for example, a business that regularly is getting deliveries. You know, and then a very basic kind of web hosting where this information can be presented with no distractions and, you know, linked to very easily. And what I liked about this is it kind of eliminates all the complexity of these kind of codes and things like that. And for example, what three words or whatever, where they all rely on, you know, people understanding what these codes mean and how they work. And this took it in a much simpler direction.
Right. Okay.
So of course at this stage, it's kind of still at a prototype stage. I think he has one or two customers, hoping now to push it out to more. So, I mean, the piece that, of course, that was most interesting there is just there have been so many people working on this project, and we see so many different approaches, over the years. So
I like this one because what you're saying to somebody is you've got a bed being delivered, for example, or a piece of furniture being delivered.
Yeah.
Help us to make your delivery a little bit simpler by, and then click on a map to show where your delivery point is. Give us a suggestion about where we can park if you can't park directly outside. And it's a lot simpler and a lot more scalable than sort of putting a spy in the cab of the delivery driver and trying to extrapolate that information from hundreds of millions of deliveries.
Yes, I mean that's the fundamental concept here was simplicity and a workflow that humans can easily understand, right?
Yeah, and also if you've got something being delivered, helping out the delivery driver a little bit has a benefit for you. So why not do it? And then it's there forevermore,
right?
You know, I don't know whether you get it, but I certainly get. If you've got somebody coming to do some service work in the house or something, you know, they'll ask questions about where can I park and that sort of thing. So yeah, good idea.
We shall see. Anyway, then we headed to the pub, which was great. A very fun evening catching up with everyone. Very good conversations. Lots of old friends there, lots of new people. Several people, you know, for whom it was their first EOMOB, who said they'd been really looking forward to it. So it was delightful. It was really wonderful.
Great. So, I got some great feedback.
We have now set the date for our next event in London, which I think is October. October the 22nd. I think we have one speaker lined up, maybe more. We had another speaker who was due to speak last week, but she had to cancel, so she will speak then. Anyway, so we need more volunteers. So and with that, Stephen, we're kind of into the summer now. As we're speaking now on Monday the 23rd, so tomorrow night there is one more event in Edinburgh, which looks like it'll be a good one. I'm not going to be able to attend. But then we kind of head into summer break.
Yep. So we've got Edinburgh. What, next week? No, tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Then tomorrow. Berlin, 25th of September.
Yeah, we got a Berlin in September, then London, then I think we'll have a few more in the autumn, you know, as they'll fill in due time. So
great. Okay. So how about a bit of news? What have we got on the news front?
Well, I do have one bit of news, a new feature that we launched on OpenKitch, kind of came out of nowhere. But I don't know if you're aware, Stephen, but the Indian government has launched India Post, the postal service in India, has launched a new location scheme identifier, whatever, called DigiPin. So I think the digit stands for the fact that obviously it's digital, but also that it's 10. So this is an alphanumeric code of 10 characters that very similarly to OpenStreetMap, to what three words, sorry, chops all of India up into 4-meter by 4-meter grid. And through a manipulation of longitude latitude converts the center point of the grid into the DigiPin. Different than what three words is that there is kind of a hierarchy. So, you know, things near each other have kind of similar codes. So,
in fact, it's without being, I think it's probably more like the open source Google Plus codes.
Yes, I think it is like that to a degree. I don't know.
Yeah. You
know,
so,
so
the first couple of characters indicate the state and then the city, and then it narrows down within that.
Yes. I mean, the piece that's quite interesting here is that it's actually backed, of course, by the official Postal Service. So, and we should give the context where, you know, a couple years ago, India rolled out, I mean, I think it's like 10 years ago now, but India rolled out this kind of a unique number for every person, like an identifier number, ID number, which also can be used as kind of a bank account or as some sort of payment mechanism. And this has proven to be very successful and allows instant kind of, you know, cash transfers, even I think there's no fee or almost no fee. And so even for small, very small transactions, now in India, a lot of people use these kind of real-time transfers. So I guess the population is now more and more familiar with having this kind of unique code that you use in your day-to-day life. And the intention here is that we kind of piggyback on that familiarity to move also into the physical world so that every 4-meter by 4-meter grid will have its code. And, you know, the idea, of course, that you'll be able to use this then in delivery services because, frankly, they need some sort of better solution than what they have now. I mean, Indian addresses are a complete catastrophe. So,
well, we assume that every street and alleyway has a consistent name and everything, and it's not the case. You know, lots of people live on streets or whatever that don't have names even, you know. So,
Stephen, my experience and my travels to India and business experience with India is that everything you have ever heard about India is true. Mm-hmm. Everything. Both positive and negative. If you can imagine it, it's happening in India all at once. Okay. I mean, every conceivable scenario you could ever envision is happening in India right now. Okay. So, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot going on. Let's say.
Yeah.
And so you can imagine, we need kind of a very basic, you know, I don't want to say simple, but like a system that will work anywhere for anything is really going to be the only option. So anyway, the reason we became aware of this at OpenCage, and so we now support that you can enter a digit code, a DigiPin, and we tell you where that is. But likewise, if you type in, you know, a traditional Indian address or coordinates in India, we also tell you the DigiPin of that location.
To the extent that you can do, because unless you've got every building on a street, you're not going to know the individual DigiPins.
Well, no, I mean, so but this is the same as any, we'll just use the center point. So if you just put in Mumbai, you know, we can calculate a center point of Mumbai and we tell you the DigiPin of that. Obviously, I don't know how useful that is for you because it's just the center point. But,
I mean, the thing is, I think that the distinctive thing here is that it's been developed by the Indian Postal Service.
Yes. You know,
it is going to get traction.
We shall see. I mean, I can imagine there is a huge demand for, you know, just like everywhere else in the world, a huge demand for e-commerce and deliveries and food deliveries and things. And the barrier is, you know, e-commerce works when things can efficiently be delivered. It doesn't work when things can't efficiently be delivered. So,
and India, I mean, it's a few years since I was last there, but, you know, every single person, you know, it seems, has a mobile phone.
Of course, 100%.
Yeah. I mean, not many people have landlines, but everybody has mobile phones. They're using the mobile for banking, as you said. You know, I mean, it's a very digital society, even though it may not be a wealthy society.
I think it has become that in the last, you know, 10 years. So, anyway, that's all I've got in terms of news. What about you?
Okay, so I suppose there's a little UK initiative started by my pal Alex Rottersley, which is called Geo100. You could find it at geo100.com. It's another one of these awards list type things. What maybe distinguishes it is it's not about companies self-promoting. It's about individuals. It's UK-centric, and it's actually trying to recognise people who are doing cool things but aren't maybe at the top of their industry or the sort of high-visibility role or something. So I don't know whether it's going to be a success or not yet. I was invited to be a judge, and I said, sure. We'll see what kind of applications we get and how much traction it gets. But if you're interested in learning a bit more about it, it's geo100.com. Have a look.
Well, we'll put it in the show notes as well.
Okay. I think that's all our news, isn't it?
I think that's all we got, Stephen.
Yeah.
You know, I think summer vacation is kind of upon us, so... No vacation for the podcast, of course. We'll keep pumping out the episodes, but nevertheless, it's time for a break, I think. So,
well, I won't ask you where you're off to, but wherever you're going, have a good time.
You as well, Stephen.
Okay.
Take it easy, everyone. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us today on the GeoMob Podcast. We hope you enjoyed the discussion. You can get the show notes over on the website, which is at thegeomob.com. And while you're there, you can sign up for our monthly newsletter and find links to our accounts on Mastodon and LinkedIn, so that you can stay up to date on all our upcoming events. We hope to see you at an event soon.